Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program that's devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who know that the world's religious, political, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt, and who are beginning to question their military, recognizing that all of these are counterproductive and that there isn't a way to fix any of them. We most certainly should not demonstrate our loyalty or support for any of them. Our phone number, if you'd like to engage in this discussion, even if you'd like to disagree, all right, it's toll free, 877-300-7645. I am Yada. Earlier this week, a top European Union official warned that Europe faces a huge challenge in persuading Jews not to emigrate in response to anti-Semitism. You know, it's interesting that in the prophets, Yahweh makes a number of statements regarding his chosen people. Yahudim would be the closest thing to Jews in terms of being accurate in Hebrew. Yisraelites would be all 12 tribes. Yahudim is one tribe, Yahuda, which means related to Yahudim in the plural, would be one of the tribes, but it is the tribe that was responsible for Yahuda and Jerusalem and the heart of Israel. It's clearly Yahweh's favorite. And what he had to say is that, first, the most important statement is that in talking to Abraham, that he would provide an everlasting covenant for Abraham's descendants, which are these Israelites. Abraham and Sarah gave birth to Yishak, laughter, who gave birth to Jacob, which means one who supplants his heel, who walks upright and steadfast, doesn't waver from side to side, Jacob. And Jacob was renamed Yisrael by Yahweh, and he was the father of each of the 12 Israelite tribes, including Yahuda and therefore Yahudim. And he told Abraham, and he reminded him and us repeatedly thereafter, that this was an everlasting covenant, that while the Israelites had broken it, while they had done everything to undermine it, while they were paying no attention to its terms and conditions, and therefore Yahweh and Hosea divorced himself of them, the divorce, he told us right as he was declaring the divorce, that it would not be forever, that there would be a time when they would be his children again. And at that time is the same time that he tells us prophetically that he's not only calling his children back to his land, their land, the promised land, Israel, but that shortly after he calls them back to the land, that he is going to reconcile his relationship with them. That is what the day of reconciliation, Yom Kippurim, is all about, is reconciling his relationship with his children. He returns on Yom Kippurim as the Messiah. This time I think he's just returning as Yahweh as opposed to a substantially diminished manifestation, Yahusha. And so in the cracks between those broad strokes, if you will, of prophetic resonance regarding the covenant's children, there's also the prophetic warning and encouragement that Yahweh will bless, kneel down in love to lift up, those who lift up those who love Israel, and that those who curse Israel, he'll ignore, trifle with, allow them to suffer the fate of man. And so that's important relative to their return and to these people. And of course, in 1948, Israel became a nation again, which belies all odds. Now, also in this discussion, Yahweh, particularly in the prophet Yeshayah, tells us that his children are going to return to the promised land. It's not just that the 1948 they're going to become a nation again, and half the world's Jewish population now lives in Israel. There's a little tickle under half, maybe 45%, about 40% living in the United States, maybe 42. And what he says is that anti-Semitism is going to rise to the point that the remaining Jews are going to emigrate. The last to emigrate, those who actually leave during the tribulation, the last 7 years prior to his return and the ultimate reconciliation, who live in the United States will be the last to leave, but they too will leave because Yahweh is providing a dire warning to America in Isaiah 18, relative to our involvement in the Greater Syrian War, which would be Syria and Iraq and Iran. Greater Assyria meaning everything that was once part of Assyria. And he is really clear that the anti-Semitism that is going to cause exactly what this man said, the Jews throughout the world, with the exception of the United States, to leave to go to Israel just for safety. And think of that, you know, how many Muslims are trying to kill them in Israel. But at least there's protection in numbers there. And they're not so isolated and so individually hated, because anti-Semitism is extraordinarily strong now throughout Europe. And some countries, like the most bankrupt European country, Greece, 85% of the people are anti-Semitic. The second most anti-Semitic country in the European area would be the Ukraine, where the worst atrocities of the Holocaust took place. So this is exactly what Yahweh predicted. Now, in the United States, we're conflicted. You know, Christians don't really understand this connection to Israel. They really don't like Jews. They hate the Torah. They hate the religion. They don't like the people very much. They've, you know, had a long history of being anti-Jewish, but they know that there is this prophecy, and, you know, Christians just love prophecy. And so they're a little conflicted. And so the anti-Semitism isn't quite as strong in America, and partly because there's a lot fewer Muslims in America than there are in Europe. You know, a fraction of 1% as opposed to, you know, as much as 5 to 10% in certain countries. But this is precisely what God predicted. And we're witnessing it happening. That's the enjoyable thing about reading and studying Yahweh's predictions. And I, you know, every time I say predictions, I cringe a bit, because his prophecies really aren't predictions. They're future history. He has already witnessed these things happen and is just reporting back in our past what is going to occur in our future, because he's not stuck in time like we are. Now, in the European Union, they know this is a huge challenge because they're allowing Muslims to flood into Europe. They're extraordinarily disruptive. They're bringing their Mein Kampf mindset with them. And they are attacking Jews with great regularity. And so a European Commission vice president, Frans Timmermans, suggested the issue was as urgent as the trouble with the currency, with the euro itself. He said, in some EU states, the majority of the Jewish community is not sure they have a future in Europe. Yeah, the vast majority of Jews in Europe recognize there's no future there for them. France, with the EU's biggest Jewish community, and by far, there are more Jews in France than there are in the rest of Europe combined. Yeah, France is the largest home for Jews in Europe, but it's also, you know, the largest repository of Muslims in Europe. And France has just announced another round of sweeping anti-terror measures after the Islamic attacks. French Prime Minister Manuel Valls said 2,680 new security-related jobs would be created, including 1,100 in police intelligence. But you see, that's not the solution. You're not going to solve anti-Semitism with more police. We do not forestall Islamic atrocity with intelligence, not the kind that they're talking about, which is spying. You know, if you want to create an environment where everyone is safe, but most particularly Yahweh's chosen people, Yahudim, Israelites, Jews, then come to understand who Yahweh is. Come to observe, which is to closely examine and carefully consider his Torah, which is his foundational declaration to humankind. And you'll understand fully not only what Yahweh's relationship is to his people, but what how Yahweh responds to us based upon how we respond to them. And second, so that you rid Europe of the criminal enterprise that is not only terrorizing Jews, but, you know, in Charlie Hebdo, they were indiscriminate. It didn't matter what race or religion the individual was. In fact, Charlie Hebdo was a resolutely unreligious organization that took great pleasure in attacking Jewish institutions. And so it's beyond just knowing the truth. Knowing the truth is the single most important step to resolving anti-Semitism. In fact, resolving really all hostilities towards our fellow man. You'll have no need for intelligence services like in the United States, the CIA and NSA. You have no need for judicial apparatus. You have no need for a military. If you know Yahweh, you just rely on him and he will protect you from all of those things. There's just no need for any of them. And when you do that, while that resolves the individual, you still have a climate that's hugely conflicted. You still have an environment where it is hugely polluted. The society is still diseased. And that is because Islam is a criminal enterprise. And it has to be removed from Europe for Europe to be safe. We'll be back. So there's two things you can do in Europe to resolve this problem. And the problem isn't going away. That's why the vast preponderance of Jews know, and that's why even the non-Hebrew population of Europe recognizes that there's no future for God's chosen people in Europe. And you might say, oh, yeah, goodbye and good riddance. You know, there's a lot of conspiracy theorists that want to blame Jews for everything. And they just don't like Jews. Well, the fact is that they, on average, are brighter than the rest of us. That's just statement of fact. You know, just look at scientific discoveries. Look at Nobel Prize winners. Look at medical doctors and professions of scientists, professions of higher learning. They're just smarter than the rest of us. On average, that's the generality. They're also, on average, less engaged in indulgences. In other words, they're less likely to be a parasite on society. And when they are forced out of a society, two things happen. Even though they are currently divorced from God, and most of them haven't a clue who he is, have no relationship whatsoever with him, God still pays attention to them. And they leave, and not much of a presence of Yahweh in your country. That's not good. And second, you lose the intellectual, economic, the academic, the social, the artistic, the medical benefit of having them there. And you don't get any benefit from the Muslims. They are a net drain. They are a criminal enterprise. And it's, we don't say that to be pejorative. Don't say that to be inflammatory. I say that because it's a statement of fact. Islam was founded as a criminal enterprise and remains such. Muhammad founded Islam in the first year of the Islamic era by committing a terrorist robbery against a civilian caravan, merchants, for the express purpose of robbing them, of kidnapping them, of killing them, and using the funds that he captured to fund his criminal syndicate. And if you don't think that's true, then read the biography of Muhammad as it's compiled by Ibn Ishaq, the only non-Quranic source of information about Muhammad within 150 years of his death. The only one. And read the eighth surah of the Quran, which justifies it, condemns it, brags about it, includes Allah's alleged participation in the robbery. And it's not just that Islam was born as a robbery, as part of an armed robbery, just, you know, like Bonnie and Clyde, except there were more of them. But that's all that Muhammad focused on thereafter. Was it. Was continuing to launch terrorist raids that were all directed at confiscating people's land, property, children, wives, and property. That's what he did. He did it 75 times in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. And in the 100 years that followed, that's all Islam did. It robbed the world. So, Islam is a criminal enterprise. It remains exactly as Muhammad conceived it, as it is detailed in the Quran and the Hadith. And you're not going to have any peace in Europe with the Muslim population. Not going to happen. That's just a statement of fact again, folks. It's time we come to realize that IQ al-Rasuli was absolutely right. Now, I wrote a chapter 10, 12 years ago called The Pedophile Pirate, where I began Muhammad's rise to power based upon being a pirate. I was never as clear on this as IQ has been for a long time, that Islam is a criminal enterprise, and it needs to be dealt with as such. It has done nothing to the betterment of humankind and has been its most destructive force for the past 1,400 years. No amount of additional state employees, France, will do you any good. Anyway, this minister in France pledged another $490 million in funds, saying that 3,000 people were under surveillance in France. Well, why would you put them under surveillance? Why don't you just expel them? Get rid of them. 7,500 French defense jobs due to be cut will now be saved. What good is that? And I was talking the other day about somebody who says, you know, there's a Sweden just cut their defense budget so that, now that there's a big bear Putin, what are they going to do if Russia attacks? Oh, come on, folks. I mean, we are so stupid. It's just amazing that we think that France's defense budget is going to play a part in terrorism. Think about it. The size of your military has an indirect relation to the size of your Islamic terrorist problem. The larger your military, the more willing you are to use your military, the worse your Islamic terrorism problem will be. There's a reason that most of these Islamic terrorist groups, whether they be the original Al-Qaeda, which no longer exists, or the Islamic State, or Al-Nusra, just any of them, the reason that they're almost all of them have the same three objectives. They want to turn the area they're in as their prime objective into a Sharia zone. You know, which means that their laws and their conditions are based entirely on Muhammad's words and deeds. And Muhammad was a pedophile and a rapist and a mass murderer and a kidnapper and a thief. And, you know, so it's wants to turn them into a hellhole. That's their primary objective. And they're really good at that. I mean, they are really good at destroying their own communities. The second thing that they wish to do is to obliterate Israel and kill every Jew. They love doing that. And The third thing they do is, well, I should say there's four. I probably shortchanged this. The third thing they wish to do, and by the way, the reason that they want to destroy Israel and kill every Jew is because the Quran is more anti-Semitic than was Hitler's Mein Kampf. And Hitler was a patsy in terms of his views on Jews compared to Muhammad. Muhammad wanted the women raped. Muhammad wanted all the children sold into slavery. Muhammad had all the men killed, far worse than even Hitler. Now, as you move to their fourth goal in all their communities, is that any minority, whether it be they're Sunni and the minority is Shia, whether their minority would be the Zoroastrians, which is a legacy from ancient Persia, whether the minority be Christians. I know there was a 1.5 million minority of Christians in Iraq before we invaded, under 100,000 left. They wish to subject anyone who is different than they are, ethnically or religiously, to degrading conditions, raping and enslaving the little girls, turning the boys into killers, murdering the parents, stealing their property, degrading them in every possible way. That's their third objective. Their fourth objective is to destroy the United States. You know, if you listen to their priority list, and they hate the United States because, A, the United States has a very large military and is willing to use its military, albeit stupidly, counterproductively, but the United States will bring its soldiers into Islamic countries and kill Muslims. And it uses drones to kill Muslims. And it gloats about the number of Muslims it kills. Look at American Sniper. It's about a man who is being called a patriotic hero because he killed the most Muslims. And so on the fourth priority of Muslims, the bigger your military and the more you're prone to use it, the more you are going to be attacked by Islamic terrorists. You know, their biggest attack in modern times is 9/11. Do you think it was perchance that it was against America? You don't understand why it was against America? 9/11 occurred because America decided to come to Saudi Arabia's aid and oust Saddam Hussein from Kuwait when Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, having previously fought the Soviet Union with American weapons, victoriously wanted that honor and were shamed out of it. So the reality is that the bigger your military, the less safe you are from Islamic terrorists. Now, as it relates to the stupidity of Sweden, for example, saying, oh, my God, without it, Putin's a big, bad bear, and we've reduced our military to almost nothing. You know, we have no way of protecting ourselves. Russia's not about to invade Sweden. Russia didn't even invade the Ukraine. And it's theirs. And the people there want them to. Not about to invade Sweden. And if Russia wanted to invade Sweden, Sweden could have had the biggest military in its history, and it couldn't have stopped it. And I don't know what people think about militaries providing freedom. I mean, the U.S. military has never provided freedom for Americans. It is a drain on the society, mentally, emotionally, economically, its character, its ability to reason. So if you want to solve the problem in Europe, particularly in France, of anti-Semitism, there's two ways to go about it. Military isn't going to help you. Building up your security and intelligence apparatus is not going to help you. Having more government jobs and more government spending isn't going to help you. Only two things you can do. You can learn the truth about Islam and then eradicate it like you would eradicate any criminal enterprise, disassociating from it, no longer doing business with Islamic countries, no longer allowing Muslims to emigrate, no longer allowing Islamic institutions to operate within your country. It's just like saying that organized crime can't have a safe haven and can't do its business as normal in any country without being prosecuted. And the second is you've got to come to know why Yahweh loves Israel and Israelites. And the only way to do that is to study his Torah. On January 9th, as we know, an Islamist militant shot four Jewish men during a hostage takeover at a kosher supermarket in Paris. He was subsequently killed by police, as were two Islamist militants who earlier had killed 12 people at the Paris offices of the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, who were shouting that they were avenging the cartoons of their Prophet Muhammad, capital P. Prophet Muhammad was not a prophet. He never predicted anything accurately. Speaking in Brussels, Mr. Timmermans said about Jewish fears, "I think this is a huge challenge to the very foundations of European integration." Now, Jews represent a tiny percentage of Europe. You know, well, 42% of Jews reside in America, and about 45% of the entire Jewish population lives in Israel. So you've got almost 90% between Israel and the United States of the remaining 10%. France probably has, France has the most as the third country. But then, you know, you've got countries like Canada's got a reasonable population. Argentina, which is the country that is still wrestling with the Iranian sponsorship of the terrorist attack that killed some 80 people, 80 Jews in Argentina. And so France is disproportional. That is, it's absolutely true. I mean, there are virtually no Jews, for example, in Greece, and the Jewish population in Ukraine has gone from millions to a few thousand. So the exodus is already well underway. There are very few Jews left, for example, in Spain. Roman Catholicism was extraordinarily rough on Jews. And now this assault of Islam is, again, an anti-Semitic religion. So here are the comments. He says, "We can talk till kingdom come about the euro, about international markets, about whatever initiative we take. But this, if this fundamental value in European society, which is that there's no place for everyone, whatever your creed is, whatever your background is, whatever your race is, the choices you make in society, that is challenged, we have to answer that challenge by a policy that offers hope and prospects for everyone in European society," end quote. He's wrong. He's just wrong. You know, it's the lack of being able to be discriminating. It's like what's called the Arab-Israeli conflict. And there's this sense that the Jews are provocative with the Arabs and the Arabs attack, and that the Jews are, drive them into oblivion. And that, you know, the Jews are oppressing them and are occupying their homes, and that there is a mutuality to this, and there isn't. Every attack is initiated by Muslims against Israel. And it has been that way. And it continues to be that way. And in this case, Jews aren't attacking Muslims. Muslims are attacking Jews. And if you deal with everybody the same and you don't discriminate between those who are the victims and those who are the perpetrators, then you're grotesquely immoral. You cannot create a loving, peaceful, nurturing home for people to live. If you're willing to allow in that home those who are diseased to the point that they're enraged and destructive, it just cannot happen. If you treat Muslims and Jews the same, then you're going to continue to be terrorized. You will continue to experience exactly what's happening. Your society will devolve. Because The whole purpose of exercising good judgment is being able to determine that which is good and that which is bad, that which is right, that which is wrong, that which is productive, and that which is destructive. And if you cannot make the connections between, for example, terrorism and the fact that 99.9% of terrorist acts today are perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims, then you have lost the ability to exercise good judgment. You've lost the ability to be discerning and discriminating. And as such, you have no means to resolve any problem, much less this one. Mr. Timmerman also said that he wanted to see a swift decision on sharing of passenger name records and reinforcing outside borders. The 26 countries that have abolished international passport controls. He said that it should be part of the problem, part of the solution. The problem isn't individual Muslims. It's Islam. It's not somebody who has an Islamic name. It's Muslims. And until we recognize that the problem is Islam, not an individual here and there, and make the common denominator connection, terrorism will prevail. As many of you know, U.S. House Speaker John Boehner invited Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to speak before Congress on the topic of Iran. The Republicans and the Democrats are in a very different position relative to both Israel and Iran. The Congress has almost always been resolutely, in terms of at least its bills, pro-Israel. But the U.S. State Department has been almost consistently anti-Israel. And administrations have given lip service to Israel while arming, aiding, enriching Israel's enemies. So the administration anti-Israel with lip service to Israel, actions anti-Israel, Congress pro-Israel, and the State Department hugely, overwhelmingly anti-Israel. And the United States is mostly responsible. No other nation is more responsible for Iran's nuclear program. We built the nuclear reactor in Iran and provided the fuel for that nuclear reactor during the time of Henry Kissinger and Jimmy Carter. Ford, President Ford. It's called the Atoms for Peace Program. And so we're responsible for that sucker. And it was a horrible, horrible, horrible miscalculation on behalf of the United States. One the United States hardly ever takes blame for. And, of course, then we exacerbated the problem when we invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran. And that's what's caused the Syrian civil war and all the destabilization that exists in Europe right now. Throughout the Middle East right now. This particular administration is headed by a man who has overwhelming Muslim sympathies. IQ claims he is a Muslim. By birth, he is a Muslim. When your father is a Muslim, you are a Muslim, period. And if you cease to be a Muslim, they will kill you. By birth, he is a Muslim. By early education, he's a Muslim. Personally, I don't really care. His religion is himself. He is equal parts secular humanist and communist, as he is radicalized Christian, as he is Muslim from my point of view. He's kind of the same integration that I expect to see in the Torahless one of the last days, although I think the Torahless one will be even more willing to cite both from the Quran and from Paul's letters. But this hostility toward Israel has never been greater. Matter of fact, there's a huge big rift right now in Israel between Israel and the Obama administration. The Mossad evidently in a private briefing with American intelligence, told American intelligence and the administration that outright hostility towards Iran will more galvanize their position than it than working in other ways to eliminate the threat of a nuclear Iran. And the Mossad suggested that America's rhetoric towards Iran was not helpful. And so the administration not only took that wrongly and said that, well, you know, the Mossad doesn't think that we should engage in hostility and hostile actions against Iran, and that there's no problem with the Mossad doesn't think there's a problem with a nuclear Iran, and has used that against both the Republicans in Congress and against Benjamin Netanyahu and his speech, upcoming speech on Iran. You've got two issues there. One is that's not what the Mossad said, and B, when a president shows so little regard for a private discussion as to not only disclose it, but to twist it, you lose all confidence. You won't tell them anything in the future. And that's the case here with this administration and Israel. They despise Obama, and Obama despises them. And so it is appropriate that Speaker John Boehner asked Netanyahu to speak before Congress. But as showing that they're childish, the administration says, but then you can't meet with the president. Okay. So why would Netanyahu want to meet with him again anyway?